and welcome to In Kind. I'm social scientist Julie Kroner. I've spent my life interviewing thousands of people, and now I'm on a mission to scale global empathy. On In Kind, I lead guests through the letting go of something they need to release. And afterwards, I synthesize and give you tools and resources to help you start moving emotional blockages in your life. I know firsthand the power of release. Quite frankly, it's changed my life, and the hope is that it changes yours. Hey, listeners, this is an exciting episode of In Kind, a completely different angle on release and letting go, but one that we all deal with. It is universal. Everyone I know, including myself, has dealt with the release of family heirlooms and possessions and all of the guilt and the feelings and the attachments that come with that and not knowing how to do that. So if you've ever had to get rid of something that someone else gave you, you inherited furniture, or you have someone's favorite dish or ring or artwork, these things carry emotional and energetic weight, and you know what I'm talking about. So Cynthia's got this very eloquent, simple way of telling you how to do this purging and not only come away without guilt, but gain energy and aliveness in the process. So please enjoy. Hi, Cynthia. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Good, good. I'm excited about this. Why don't you start by telling us who you are, where you're calling from, and what you'd like to release today?
I'm Cynthia, and I live in the suburbs of Philadelphia in a town called Bryn Mawr. And I'm looking to release the feelings of nostalgic attachment and the accompanying guilt in letting go of family heirlooms while downsizing my life for the better.
Oh, this is a good one. Yes. Okay. So I'm really happy that you're on the show for a couple of reasons. One is that for selfish reasons, because I have some things that I've been thinking about a lot and like for years. And I would love to learn how you have moved through that. And I know that this applies to probably everybody out there. So that's incredibly useful. And then the second is that this is a really interesting angle on letting go and on release. And it's something that I don't think we don't spend a lot of time thinking about it until we have to, or it's forced, or it comes up as a forced thing. But when you and I were chatting earlier and deciding about, you coming on the show, you had said some things to me that made me really think this is a topic that so many people deal with and it's not getting any attention. So I look at it as a form of self-compassion, which is one of the major things that we talk about on In Kind. And I really look at it as a form of emotional release. So I'm very much looking forward to hearing more of your story. So first of all, what are these items? I'd love to paint a picture of what kinds of things you had or have and are trying to release.
I'd also like to address, just this sort of systemic nostalgia that everybody has for things.
Yes.
And that gets instilled from, our childhood on, I think, by our parents and our grandparents. At least it was for me and many of my friends I speak for. So you go through your life putting value on things that were never really your things. They were someone else's things. And then if you happen to inherit those things, or somehow or another those things come to be with you and you carry them around with you, it's almost like this process of loving it. And then how do you find a way to let it go and realizing it's not serving in your life anymore, and that there must be something else that would fill that space. But until you let that go, you never know what's going to come.
Yeah, I like how you put it, that there's a systemic almost nostalgia, but nostalgia not in the good way, like nostalgia that is taking up space. And we know rationally that when something takes up space, it displaces some other space that we have. So you're left wondering, what could, if I were free of that space, what kind of energy exchange could I get from, you know, releasing these things? So yeah, I think we should definitely talk about throughout the nostalgia. And I think that's a huge part of it.
Well, and I think you also keyed on something there, talking about it as space and taking up space, because most people, and me included, we don't really address these things until we realize we don't have the space for them anymore. In my case, downsizing to a smaller living space, I had to really look at things and think, am I taking this? How many years have I been traveling around with this? For instance, my grandmother's trunk. I was gifted it by my grandmother when I was 16 years old, and I was head over the heels in love with it. This old rustic steamer trunk filled with all her old beaded flapper dresses and silk kimonos and just fancy, beautiful clothes, including some of her, you know, undergarments from, you know, the 1800s, wow. You know, bloomers and little, like a little bustier kind of thing. And I was just thrilled and fascinated to be the keeper of those things. And that carried on for just about 50 years. And I moved 9 times during those 50 years. And every time that trunk came with me. Now, truthfully, I may never have opened that trunk, maybe once every 2 years or 3 years, just to revisit what was inside and appreciate what was inside. But mostly it was just sort of a thing in my life that just came with me, that I felt an affinity to, that I felt this nostalgia for, that, you know, of course, reminded me of my grandmother and my love for her. Of course, that's part of it. But when push came to shove, and it was the day, you know, like, I'm not going to have room in my new home for this, then I really started to think about these things. Like, why do I have them? You know, what are they doing for me? When am I going to let them go, if ever? And then who might want them? You know, that's always our thought process is, well, this must be valuable to somebody, you know. And I toyed with finding people who collect vintage clothing or costume people who might enjoy these things or theaters that might need this kind of clothing. So it's a multi-layered sort of feelings that you go through.
When you got this at 16, was your grandmother alive?
She had just passed.
Did you have conversation with her about the trunk?
Before she died, I did. And I think she had showed me what was in there one time, and I was thrilled at everything she showed me. So she willed me the trunk when she died.
Yeah, because I would imagine that that would have a lot of influence, or that would matter a lot if there was some sort of like conversation, or like you two sat together and opened it and looked at it. And
I have two older brothers, and there's no other female siblings in my family. And so I had a special relationship with my grandmother. She treated me with a little more, you know, specialness, I think, in some ways. Mm. So because I could understand what these things were and what they meant to her. It's an interesting thing how long we keep this type of nostalgia rolling through your life.
And so moving 9 times, and I know from what you've told me before that you've moved, it's not like, you know, you moved from New Jersey to Philadelphia. I mean, you've had some small moves, but you've had cross-country moves a few times.
Yes.
So when you get ready for one of these cross-country moves, was it prior to this last move? Was it like a given? Like you look at the trunk and it's just like, there's no negotiation, that's coming.
Oh, yes, exactly. That's exactly how it was. Mm. You know, now that we're talking about this, you know, it's making me think it was like part of my identity, having that trunk.
Mm. Yeah, that seems very plausible. And I think that's the case for a lot of people, is that it mm-hmm. feels like it's become part of you.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that we get into a lot on the podcast is self-talk. So some of the things that you have been saying to yourself about these objects or about the systemic nostalgia or about the space or just how you sort of negotiate with yourself. And I'm interested in how it might have changed over time. So, you know, you said when you first acquired, at least for the trunk, we're only on item one, which is a big one. And I think that's really a cool symbolic one because it's huge and it had really sentimental clothing is very sentimental. And, mm-hmm. you know, you knew the person intimately who wore that clothing. Like, what kinds of conversations were you having with yourself in order to mm-hmm. to let that go?
I started to look at not only this trunk, but a lot of different family heirlooms in the light of, okay, I was told this is valuable, or I was told this was precious, and I believed that, and I wanted to keep it because of that. But when I started to think about my personal life and what I like if I was going to go out and buy a trunk and fill it with dresses, it would be a completely different trunk with different clothing inside. And I think I started to think to myself, you know, at this stage in my life, I just want to surround myself with the things that I like, that I choose, that I deem to be precious, not what someone else told me was precious or special, that I should love this because of this reason. I wanted to make that decision for myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and amazing that it takes kind of that long to do it, and maybe some other constraints, almost like design constraints around, hey, I just don't have the room for this now.
Another thing happens, and that's it's almost like stages, I guess. And one of the stages you go through, I think, is, you know, okay, who else would want this? Okay, do my siblings want this? You know, so you contact them. Or if you have children, you might say, does my daughter want this? You know, so you contact them. And 9 times out of 10, they say no. They don't want it.
Yes.
They've already feathered their nest. They don't have room for it. They don't really care about it. So once you get past that hurdle, that you're not saving it for someone else, then you can start to think about yourself, I think. But there is that sort of familial duty, you know, where you have to, you know, go through that process first so that nobody would come back to you and say, like, how could you have gotten rid of grandmother's trunk?
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, there's a couple.
So you give that a chance.
Uh-huh. I mean, there are a couple sides to that whole, you know, the stepwise process of getting rid of something like that. Because, yes, there absolutely might be someone who, I know in my own family, there was someone who coveted these crystal goblets. I won't name names, but, you know, somebody in my family wanted these beautiful colored crystal goblets forever. And my grandmother, I had a similar relationship with my grandmother, really, really, really close. And she said that I could have them, not directly to me, but I think to my mom. So my mom was kind of the keeper and still is the keeper of many of her things and did the job of distributing things as best she could with the wishes and whatnot. But these goblets went to me, and I did want them for a long time, but I kept not taking them because they're in Wisconsin and I was always in some other state. But I did have the opportunity many, many times. I just kept forgetting, or, you know, I might have been in a place that I didn't have room for them, or multiple things happened at junctures when I could have acquired, you know, and taken these goblets home, and I didn't. And my mom asked me maybe a few months ago again about them. And she said something like, hey, next time you come, you know, do you want me to pack those things up? Because she was getting rid of a whole bunch of stuff in her own house. And I just immediately said, no, 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 give those to fill in the blank. It, like, I didn't even think about it. And so, and she was like, but wait, we've yeah. been saving these for you for decades and decades, you know, because you really yeah. wanted them. And I said, yeah, I'm sorry. I suddenly had somewhat of a realization like you did, where they became things and they didn't become part of some extension of my grandmother. Mm-hmm. They were just a thing. And I have all other, so many other ways of remembering her. And it just all of a sudden meant nothing to me.
Yeah. You know, remembering your grandmother and actually I got this from a friend of mine who told me she did this, and it was very, very helpful for me. She said, take out the dresses, you know, look at them, honor them, think about your grandmother, think about her wearing them, think about her dancing in them, think about her, you know, living a life with those, and then explain, these are not for me anymore, and I'm going to let them go. And actually, you know, try and make that connection emotionally in your mind with your grandmother, call it in the spirit world, you know, to really make it clear that you love her, you love that this was all with you, but now it's time for it to go. And that was really helpful for me. I did that with many different things that I was getting rid of as I made this downsizing move.
Well, that was what I was going to ask. What was the final conversation with yourself? Was it that and the trunk?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Just like that. Just really appreciating, honoring, and thanking, really, her for, like, putting them in my hands and allowing me to love them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did you... Well, maybe I'll ask this after we talk about some of the other items, but I'm curious, were there other items that had that level of nostalgic significance for you?
Yes. A couple things that come to mind are the crystal bowl and my father's football sweater. My father went to Hampton Sydney University, and so this football sweater had a big H on the front of it, and my last name happens to start with H, and I can remember wearing his football sweater in high school, you know, because it was my size, it was cool, I just enjoyed wearing it, and then I ended up carrying it around with me for years, and wrapped in a plastic bag, you know, like keeping it very precious. And you know, every time I would look at it, I'd think, oh, you know, dad's sweater. But again, when it came time to let it go, I asked my brother, my oldest brother, would you like dad's football sweater? He's like, no. And my other brother said yes. So he's the keeper of the sweater now. And that's another thing that can happen. When people do say yes, they want something, there's a release that goes with that. You're like, oh, great. I don't really have to, you know, pick some bad place for this to go. It's going to go to someone else who will now treasure it and care for it, someone that I know and love. And if I ever want to see it again, it's at my brother's house. Yeah. So, you know, that's kind of a bonus when these things get sifted down to someone else or some other place they need to go. The crystal bowl that I mentioned, I don't know. It's so funny. You know, my mom, just like all the women who were housewives in the 40s and 50s, they were given silver service at their weddings, crystal glassware, like your grandmother, crystal bowls, things like that. And we only saw those things at, you know, Thanksgiving and Christmas usually.
Yeah.
Mom always put like a value on that for me. She'd go like, look, see this crystal bowl? And she'd hit it with the end of her finger and it would ring. And she'd go, hear that sound? That's how you know this is real crystal. This is a real crystal bowl, you know? So she had a bunch of other bowls that looked like real crystal, but they were, as she would say, oh, those are just cut glass, you know, like poo-poo those. But these crystal bowls, you know, are special. So somehow or another, I ended up with this large crystal bowl. It's the kind of bowl that, you know, putting mashed potatoes in at Thanksgiving is kind of dishonoring it. You know, it's so pretty.
It needs like a fine brandy punch or something.
Yeah, right. But I carried it around and carried it around. And then when I was doing this downsizing, I took a long, long look at it and really thought about, what is the value of this today? And does anybody still want these things? And truthfully, the modern world is quite different now. Women don't keep, you know, their silver services and their crystal bowls and whatever, because we're not having state dinners, you know? So
you're not?
Yeah, no, well, I'm not. And so there isn't really a market for that stuff that I could see. I mean, maybe you could get it into some consignment shop in a, I don't know, some fancy place. But what's the point? So I ended up just donating it to the local secondhand store and thought, A, I didn't buy that, so I shouldn't be concerned with its value because I've gotten use out of it. I've enjoyed it for many years and it was free for me. Mm-hmm. So donating it is just sort of hoping someone else will pick it up and give it a life and enjoy it for many years. So that was also very freeing to try and like let go of these things that were instilled in me that were so valuable, but I didn't buy them. They weren't my choice. And even though I enjoyed them and loved them, giving something away, like giving it away, not trying to sell it, is very freeing. Mm. That just really frees you up, I think, because you just give it and let someone else find it and think it's the best thing they've seen. Like somebody in a secondhand store going ping on that bowl and going, this is real crystal, you know, like, great. Yes. Take it.
Like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I just found this. Yes. Yeah. There's so many things that you said there that really I want to unpack a little bit. So I think the idea of choice is interesting and almost like conferring value. So this, what, mm-hmm. you know, what you talked about is, you know, for your mom, this was a prized possession, quite literally. And it's something that, you know, she couldn't imagine probably you or anyone else not finding that same value attached to it, whether that's monetary value or, you know, other kinds of value. You know, that just mm-hmm. that she loved it, or she loved to put it out, or it meant a special occasion, or all those things are wrapped up in it. But mm-hmm. the idea that, you know, you carried stuff around for a long time, the bowl, the trunk, I mean, big things and little things. The bowl, I can see that could move anywhere. But the trunk was a feat that you know, were able to keep that with you for that long. But I think where I'm going with this is that at some point you were able to detach or maybe even remove the emotion a little bit from it such that, you know, you realized this isn't a choice I'd make today. Someone else told me that this had value and I believed it and I treated it as such for many years and I enjoyed it. And now it's time for someone else to have that value. I think that's an important kind of mm-hmm. exchange of space for you.
Mm-hmm.
And then
I agree.
Yeah. And then also this idea of, you know, do you worry or did you worry when you were wrestling with, you know, I'm downsizing, I either can't or don't want to keep these things anymore, with the idea of like almost like your mom's going to be turning in her grave because this is an extension of her and you know, you've just given her prized possession away. Like, does any of that enter into your self-talk or your thought processes?
Yeah, I think it might have originally, but a very interesting thing happened while I was going through this, you know, packing process. A very good friend of mine lost her daughter tragically, and she's been you know, going to a lot of different self-help groups for grieving parents and meetings and things like that, where they all get together and they communicate with their dead children on the other side of the veil, as they say. And one of them, I was telling my friend about this downsizing process I'm going through, and she said, oh, I have to tell you, at one of my meetings, there was a mother there, and she was saying that she was in contact with her daughter, but also with her mother who had passed. And that her mother, she was kind of agonizing about something that she owned that was her mother's. And her mother said to her, I can't believe you're still holding on to all that stuff. You should get rid of it. And so when she told me that, you know, it opened up a whole nother window of perspective. Because, you know, really, if our ancestors could talk, would they be saying, oh, no, that's a precious bowl, it's crystal, you have to keep it? Or would they be saying, why are you hanging on to that? You know, so I decided to go with the latter and just, you know, let it go. Just assume that nobody who's on the other side really cares if I still have their trunk or their underwear or their crystal ball, you know?
So you almost had like confirmation there, like,
yes,
posthumous confirmation that in fact it's okay, like that they're noticing that you're still hoarding these things and they're like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly. So
that is, I'm definitely hanging on to that thought. That makes me feel,
it's very helpful,
right?
It's really helpful. Yeah,
it really is. I mean, one of, yeah. I mean, I think everybody's always kind of going through this, you know, everybody has some things, like even my daughter has a huge snow globe collection, like in the, you know, not huge, but you know, she's got like 60 of them. So every time I go somewhere, I give her, you know, I buy the snow globe from this place, or she goes somewhere, she'll buy her own. And I keep thinking, like, what on earth is she going to do with this thing? But it's the first thing she says. She wants to go to school in another country. And she's like, I asked, well, what about those snow globes? And she's like, oh, no, those are coming.
Okay.
And I'm thinking, well, I'm just thinking of all the things, right? Of all the things that you could have to cart across an ocean, snow globes. I mean, it just seems very difficult. And precarious, but
okay, I totally get this though. Oh, I gotta tell you.
Okay, tell me.
Because I too was a snow globe collector.
No.
And I had, yes, I had over 100 snow globes.
Really?
And my favorites, I always liked the plastic ones that cost like $2.75 at a convenience store.
Yeah.
Not the glass ones, not the really pretty ones with the big glass globe, but the really cheap ones. And I had them for almost all the 50 states. I had them for Stonehenge. I had them, you know, like from everywhere I went in Europe, I got them. I had one of the Pope, you know, like I had one. And then friends of mine who would travel, I'd tell them like, I want a snow globe from wherever you're going, but it has to be plastic. And then I got one from Burma. I got one from the Taj Mahal. I mean, I had snow globes, and I was I loved my snow globe collection. It was really cool. It was really fun. You know, you line them all up and people come in your house and they go, wow, look at these snow globes, you know, and they were kitschy, and that really appealed to me. They were plastic and they were kitschy and they were bright colors and they were, you know, like there was one from West Virginia that had like two hillbillies on a seesaw, you know, and I'm like, what does this mean? You know, like, because they all kind of spoke to whatever that state was about, you know, and I thought, this is bizarre. So there was, I mean, I carried those around, I guess, through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 moves. Wow. So I get it what your daughter's thinking. But this time around, I looked at what they were, I thought about them, and I said, you know, I had a ton of fun collecting those. I had a blast collecting those snow globes. And I'm really glad I did. And I enjoyed that for the period of time that they served me. But now I don't need them. And truthfully, a lot of them were gifted to me, and a lot of them I just paid like $275 for. So in reality, the cost of letting them go didn't seem like it was going to be a hardship. So I picked one snow globe to keep. Guess which one it was?
The Hillbillies.
No! That's good, though. I should have.
Which one?
Stonehenge.
Stonehenge.
Because I just thought, so bizarre to have like a Stonehenge snow globe. Yes. But just having that one reminds me of my collection. And that's enough. It's a reminder. And I can still have the feeling of it. Another thing, that's another concept of letting go that I love, is now that I just discovered, you know, that I can get rid of, you know, a large collection of things and just keep one, and that it's enough. And the same thing happened. I had this dish set of my mother's that was from the 1940s. And it was like gray with a yellow dogwood on it, like a little branch with dogwood blossoms. Uh-huh. And the plates and all the serving pieces were like rounded off squares. So the plates, the cups, everything was, nothing was round and nothing was square. They were in between. And it was just very, very mid-century modern, which is an aesthetic that I love. But you couldn't put them in the dishwasher, and you had to hand wash them. You couldn't put them in the microwave. And so I only used them, you know, if I had people over for Christmas or something, I'd haul them out. But then they just took up space in a cabinet, you know? So when I was moving and I was thinking about getting rid of my everyday dishes that I'd been carrying around for 20 years, which weren't that special, but were, you know, still something that I'd just been using forever. And I wanted to buy myself new dishes for my new house. And I wanted new silverware. And I wanted it to be in a style that I love, more of a modern to mid-century modern sort of aesthetic. And I looked at this dish set and I tried to sell it online and it wasn't selling. And then when the day came that I needed to finalize everything and move, I donated it. But I kept one serving bowl and one salad plate. And now I can use those two items, mix it in with my regular dishes when I'm serving things. And it reminds me of that set, and it brings me joy just to have the one. I don't need the whole set for 12 people.
Right.
You know, so.
Yes. And as long as no one's, you know, your siblings aren't, I mean, you have two brothers, so nobody's fighting over or doing the how could you have or anything about the dishes.
Oh, yeah. And my one brother was like, yeah, I'm glad you got rid of those. I always thought they were ugly.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, thank you. Thanks for telling me. Yeah, great. That helps. That helps a lot. A similar thing happened in one of my moves out west. I was moving from Portland, Oregon to Seattle. And I had my grandfather's desk, which was a Frank Lloyd Wright style desk. And my oldest brother always loved that desk. I think he maybe even had it in his bedroom when we were kids after my grandfather died, and then it ended up going out west with me, and he had come to visit me and he saw it and he was complimenting it and enjoying it and loving it. So when I was moving up to Seattle and I thought I gotta get rid of this desk, John's gonna want it, I called up my brother and I was like, hey, you know, I'm jettisoning grandfather's desk, do you want it? And he went, no. And I was like, what do you mean, no? And he said, well, I don't have any room for that. Why are you still holding on to that? And it was just like the immediate response I had was, thank you for releasing me of that nostalgia and the guilt of letting this thing go.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it can almost like it can almost like travel. The nostalgia can travel. So it's like you had the desk, but you knew he liked the desk. And it's like, so you've got almost two things. You've got it was your grandfather's, and then your brother loved it. And, you know, you're thinking about this all these years and making these assumptions. And then it checks out that he doesn't even care anymore. So how do you describe what you learned from letting these things go?
I think we should allow ourselves to enjoy these heirlooms in our lifetime. I don't think that's a shameful thing or a horrible thing. I think it's kind of a wonderful thing, really. But in letting go, you also are freeing them, freeing yourself and freeing the thing, the object of your attention.
Do you feel, because this is a recent move for you, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Just last month.
Okay, so this is all fresh. That's good. So do you feel free? How? Mentally, physically, maybe even spiritually, energetically? What would you say?
I would say, you know, I definitely feel freer spiritually. And, you know, if that's tied to joy, which I, you know, believe it is, that I find a lot more joy with things around me that I pick. Like I say, when I pull out my new dishes or when I pull out my new stainless steel silverware, you know, I enjoy looking at it. I enjoy touching it. I've let go of these things I thought I needed to keep. And now new stuff has moved in that I love, really. And that's the emotion right there, is finding what you love and finding the joy in what you love every day.
Yes. So the spiritual freedom, and then that leads to joy of, again, going back to the choice. You know, maybe every so often you add that salad bowl or you add that piece from your mom integrating into the things that you've mm-hmm. chosen for yourself. And then you get sort of an mm-hmm. extra joy.
There's a few family heirlooms that I've kept. I didn't get rid of everything, you know. For instance, I'm sitting here in a chair with my feet up on a Queen Anne footstool that I kept. But it's a small thing, you know. It's something that's easy to move and fits in small spaces. So it made sense to keep this footstool. And, you know, I think about 5 years ago, I had it covered in, you know, a bright green fabric. So it fits in my decor, you know, but it's kind of an eclectic piece when you put it next to the modern furniture and you see this Queen Anne footstool. So there's a part of my design aesthetic. I'm a retired graphic designer. So part of my design aesthetic is always, you know, how are things fitting together or contrasting or complementing each other? So some of these small things that I kept work well in that realm.
I wonder if, you know, so if you had not downsized to the point that you did, where you still had room, say, for the trunk, would it still be there?
Truthfully, yes. I bet it would be. Because it wasn't until I really had to slice and dice and, you know, get rid of half of my possessions that I started to look at what is still serving me. Why do I have it? Do I still love it?
Yeah. And so that downsizing served as kind of a forcing function for you. And how do you feel having gone through that and done the 80% sloughing?
I feel renewed. I mean, it's like a whole new way of looking at life.
What is it? How do you describe it?
More open, more available, more, you know, not weighted down by anything. Lighter, I guess is a good way to say it.
More available. What do you mean by that?
The feeling of aliveness. Mm.
So you really are exchanging energy.
There's no doubt that these nostalgic things hold energy. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, one of my best friends, she lives in California now, she won't have anything old around her. She's always told me, I can't stand having anything old around me. I don't want to see pictures. I don't want to see old furniture. And because she feels that energy of old things, and it's not comfortable for her at all. For me, you know, having some old things, some new things feels right. But for her, yeah, she's definitely...
like she's freaked out by it.
Yeah. Well, I was freaked out at one point. I have to tell you, when I moved out west, I took all these family photos of our ancestors. And I mean, old photographs from the 1800s of our great-grandparents, our great-aunts. And I was really happy to have them. They meant something to me then. They were like my identity. I was wrapped up, you know, and like, these are my people, you know. And I took them all out there. They were all in like old frames, you know, they were all really interesting to look at. And I put them up in my bedroom in my new house. And I loved it. You know, I had them, the trunk was there. I had, you know, I had like an old, you know, like lace bedspread on the bed that was my grandmother's, you know, I sort of embraced that look back in time mentality. But after a couple years, I had to take them all down. I just couldn't stand them looking at me anymore. It was like, I gotta get rid of these photos. And again, you know, you go through the process, and I thought, oh, you know, what am I going to do with these? So I contacted my cousin, who was really into the family genealogy at the time, and asked him if he wanted them. And he said, yeah, send them. So sent all those photos to him. And again, it made me very happy to send them to him, because I knew that he would appreciate them like I did. But I had my time with them, and then it was like I was done. I think that might be part of this process, is that if you hang on longer to things and aren't able to recognize when you're done or had sufficient energy, let's, like you explained it, come from them, I think that's when it really gets to be a downer, you know, like where you really start to feel uncomfortable.
Yeah,
if you keep them too long.
Yeah, and there's like that. It almost becomes like a psychic drag. Like they're.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah,
those are not my words. I heard that somewhere else, and I heard that, and I was like, oh, that is so good. And you know, it makes me think when you describe just all of a sudden, like you literally surrounded yourself with those for years, and they were in your bedroom. So you know, you were seeing a lot of these family members. And, you know, all of a sudden you just felt, you energetically felt like, okay, I enjoyed it. It's done. These are not actually giving me positive energy anymore. And I do think if you can, it's almost like there's an emotional statute of limitations on how these things serve us. And if we can be aware of that, then we can go through your process. I love your process of the, you know, it's somewhat like the Marie Kondo kind of stuff, like take it, hold the thing, even if it's a piece of clothing or especially a photograph or a letter or a memento or a stuffed animal or a lamp, you know, anything where you are just making that decision. You've gotten the awareness, like this isn't serving me for whatever the reasons are. I'm going to touch it, hold it, think about it, have gratitude for it. And then I'm going to do X number. There might be a few different avenues of where this thing goes. You know, like you said, a family member, mm-hmm. That's the best probably scenario that someone else in your family wants to enjoy it. But some of these other things, like giving things like the beautiful crystal bowl, the real crystal bowl to a Goodwill or the like, and then somebody comes in and is just overjoyed to find it, and you're not getting, that is the exchange, is you thinking about someone discovering this thing and loving this thing, even though you know you don't know who that person is and you didn't need mm-hmm. any monetary or other kind of exchange in return. You needed nothing in return. Mm-hmm. And I think that can actually infuse, that can give energy.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
So it's like, you know, that arc of kind of like feeling your way through things. It's paradoxical because the things don't, I mean, you and I believe that these things carry energy. That's true. But they're still inanimate and there's, you know, it still should be somewhat easier to think, oh, I can give these plates away.
Keying on what you were just talking about there, when I moved from Portland to Seattle, I was downsizing at that time too. And I had these two antique four-poster twin beds that were in my grandparents' mansion when I was growing up. And then we had them at our house. And I mean, I slept on those beds as a kid and I loved them. And, you know, they had like the cannonball sort of thing at the top of the post. Mm-hmm. So they were, you know, it was like bed knobs and broomsticks kind of thing. It was really kind of, you know, I had these memories of, you know, being sick with the mumps in that bed, you know, and I was trying to sell these antiques and these were, they were signed, you know, verified antique beds, but, you know, not many people use twin beds anymore. So I had this sale and most of my antiques went, and at the end of the day, these two beds were still there. And one of my neighbors came walking down the street with a couple and he said, you know, are these beds still for sale? And I said, yeah. And he goes, this couple here is from Romania and we're hosting them. They just came to this country and our church is giving them a home. And they have these two kids and the two kids were there and they need beds for the kids. And as soon as he said that, these two kids jumped up on these beds and were kind of rolling around on them and playing on them. And he goes, what do you want for the beds? You know, and I said, oh, yeah, well, $50, you know, because at that time of the day, you just want to like send things out into the universe. And the husband and wife, the Romanian couple, talked to each other in their native language. And I could see they were a little bit distressed. And I said, you know what, just take them, yeah. You know, just, I want you to have them. Obviously your children are liking them. I can see you're going to get use out of them. Please just take them. And the woman looked at me and she said, well, I'm ashamed, you know, that you're offering me them for free. Mm. And I said, well, no, don't be ashamed. I mean, I had to convince her that for me, my heart was filled just knowing that I was gifting them to her and that they would use them and the kids would love them like I did when I was a little kid, mm-hmm. you know, and eventually they did take them. But that was an interesting twist, I thought, because, you know, I was thinking, oh, I'm going to be really generous here, you know, and give these away. And then she was ashamed that they, even $50 sounded like a lot to them to buy these beds. Mm-hmm. So, but I think that's a connection to an emotional, spiritual response of joy when you do that, when you are willing to let things go back into the universe, back into the culture, and let another human unit, you know, family unit in this case, take it and enjoy it. You know, that makes my heart soar.
Oh yeah. Those are the best. You've had some good luck with handing your things off. You have had some lovely like endings to the stories of the things.
Yeah.
So my friend just said this to me yesterday. I was telling her about our call and she said, oh, that sounds like Swedish death cleansing. And I was like, I don't know what this is.
Me either.
Okay. So Swedish death, or I think it's called Swedish death cleaning. I'm going to look it up really quickly. Yeah. So Swedish death cleaning. So, you know, it's this minimalist movement and whatever, but it's an old thing where they take what you're saying, your kind of your whole process, and maybe even the Marie Kondo appreciation for the items and thanking the items and having gratitude and then letting them go. So they're you're not just, you know, packing things up with no, you're not hiring a dumpster or a got junk thing and just not thinking at all emotionally about the letting go or the release. So you do all that, but then it's almost a step further where you do it in your lifetime with the intention of bagging and boxing things that you may want to keep, but it like in your lifetime, you might want to keep these things, but you don't want someone else when you die to have to deal with all of it. So There's it's almost like a two-step process where you do what you did. So you do the 80% sloughing off while you're alive, and you may have to do this many times. So you're looking at everything in your whole house, and you're getting rid of these things that you don't use, don't serve you, or just don't make you feel joy anymore. And you get rid of those, but then you also make these other piles that are like, okay, you know, I can't get, let's say you didn't get rid of your trunk. That would be a good example. You could have that labeled for, God forbid, you pass and your brothers are coming to, you know, clear out your house. They know that there are things that say throw away, or there's things that say donate, or there are things that say for you, or there, you know, so there are very specific labelings that you do, usually three categories, donate, for you, or throw away, that somebody just doesn't have to worry about those things. So they get to your house and those things have been, obviously you don't know when you're going to pass away, but like the, you know, there are certain things that you do keep, we do keep, and you're allowed to kind of keep as these emotional, you know, attachments or these mementos or things that, you know, if my daughter kept her snow globe collection and carried it all around, you know, the globe with her, and then, you know, one day made to put it in the donate, or you know, maybe she puts a post-it on each one and it says, this is for this person in the family or this friend or whatever. But it's taking the thinking one step further so that you're not only not burdening yourself. So you've unburdened yourself, you've released and let go in all the ways we said of say 80% of what's around you in life. But then you've also labeled these remnants, the things that are left, as best you could, to not have someone else come in and have to make those decisions.
That's, yeah, you're enabling the followers to not have to feel the guilt.
Yes.
Or the release, you know, allowing them to release it if they want to. I mean, you know, you may label something that's okay to donate and they may be like, no way, I'm keeping this.
Yes.
You know?
So even you're right. So the throwaway piles, they have the right to go through them to their heart's delight, but they know that you are not turning in your grave saying,
oh, I see.
I can't believe, you know, John didn't want this or use this or give this to someone else. You know, so it's kind of interesting. And one of the things that I read about it was, it's a quote that said something like, getting rid of items can serve as a reminder that things don't last forever, including us. So almost like bringing us closer to the thought of mortality or the acceptance of everything is temporary.
And, you know, in my process while I was going through it for the month, you know, I had to get everything done at this house that I was moving out of. When I was talking to my clients or other friends, everybody, every single person would say, oh, I've got to do that too.
Yeah.
It's easier for some, harder for others. One of my clients told me his wife wanted to have a garage sale. And he was like, no, we're not having a garage sale. And she was like, yeah, yeah, we need to have a garage sale. We're going to like get rid of a bunch of stuff. We're going to put it out there. We're going to have a garage sale. And he said, he told me, he said, how much do you want to make at this garage sale? What do you think you're going to make? And she said, I don't know, $350 or something. So the next day she left the house. He threw away everything she had tagged for the garage sale and left $350 on the counter. And she came home. She was so mad. But he said, look, now you don't have to deal with the garage sale. That's just a waste of your time. So some people are very, very brutal about this process. I mean, like they can't believe that anybody would even like think about trying to sell what they have. And I think a lot of people feel stumped. You know, they feel kind of their hands are tied, yeah, I really want to do that, but I just can't face it kind of thing.
Yes.
Like everybody always talks about old photographs, you know, like I'm working my way through. I still have another bin of photographs that I'm going through that I took, you know, my own photographs that I've taken over the years. So I go through those now and I tell myself I'm going to pick one photo from this packet that represents this event or this place or, you know, whatever I was photographing at the time, and just keep one. And then I take those ones and I put them all in one box. Okay. And now, will I go back? How often will I go back and look at even those one pictures in that one box? I don't know, but it's a way of getting rid of, again, like 80 to 90% of this paper and ink that you're carrying around. You know, truthfully, I'm an ADD adult. You know, I don't think in a linear fashion. I think in circles, and it's very hard for me to stay on task.
Yeah. And you know, these things, they creep up on us because we, you know, when you get into the circular thing, and you're not alone in the photo thing or letters, everybody gets in the rabbit hole, and, you know,
yeah,
they're crying or they're laughing or they're spending, next thing they know, it's like midnight and they've been sitting there for 4 hours. That is,
yes,
so easy, you know, to have happen. But it's like, once you do that, I want to summarize a couple of things that you've said, because I think this tactic, you know, part of what we do towards the end of guest interviews like this is to summarize tools, tactics, resources, maybe even mantras, even tiny things that you did that helped you to get to this place where you are, where you're feeling free and lighter and more alive, and all of the descriptors that you used, because that sounds delicious. And I think we all want more of that. But it's like your process of picking one, like one representative of the photos, one representative of the plates, one representative of, you know, I don't know if you kept one thing from
the snow globe.
Yeah, the snow globe. Did you keep one thing from the trunk? I don't remember.
Yes, I kept a pink silk kimono.
Wow. Cool.
Yeah.
You've got this down to a science in terms of the 99% rule, you know, like you,
yeah,
right? You know, you've kept the 1%, which is an amazing tactic. And then I'm going to just go through a couple other ones that I heard you say. And if I'm missing any, let me know. Keeping things that were really special, but making them your own. So repurposing them in some way, or changing them in some way so that they give you joy and they represent your choices and style. There's another one that you mentioned about, you know, just the joy that you get from giving and not selling something. And especially if you can see who it's going to and that they're going to love it and use it. And then, of course, the sort of easier one that is the one we all want more of, which is to pass something to a family member or a friend who wants it. But are there other things?
But let's talk about that for a second, because if in fact I've had this reckoning, let's say in my 60s, that it's time to not be nostalgic, you know, and allow things that I was so nostalgic for to allow them to leave my space, the world I inhabit. But if I pass it on to somebody else, another family member, especially, I think I don't have kids, but if for people who do, if they're assuming their daughter is going to take granny's quilt, you know, I think I would say there has to be a caveat. This is what I've learned. I feel like I would want to say to someone, if you really love this and you really want to have it, take it. It's yours. But please, I hope that you understand you never have to keep it forever and you never have to feel like there's some responsibility with it. It's just, if you like it, keep it. If it stops that you don't like it, then feel free to get rid of it or pass it on to someone else. Because I don't want to perpetuate. I feel like this heirloom, nostalgia, all these things, we aren't born thinking that's a thing. That's given to us by our parents and our grandparents. So I almost feel like I would want to break that cycle.
That's hugely important, actually. I love that you said that. It's yeah. almost like it has to come with, yeah, breaking the cycle, and it comes with like a disclaimer. That's a lovely sentiment that, again, we don't really take the time to even care about these things because we think like, oh, these are just objects. They're just things. But a lot of them come with so many
baggage
and things glommed onto them and people and emotions. And like, if you looked at it as a solid thing, you'd probably see it just covered with all of these attachments. And we don't think of it like that. And, you know, it's very easy for someone to just think, oh, when I die, you know, whatever, I don't care what happens to my things. But there is much more to that story. And it doesn't involve just us.
Yeah.
Did I miss anything in the summary of some of your tactics?
Thinking about your ancestors or relatives or whatever on the other side of the veil, just completely thinking you're nuts for keeping their stuff.
Yes. Maybe it falls into the mantra kind of realm where if you can believe that, you know, for me, the evidence is enough that you just told me. I mean, now I've heard it, what, thrice removed. I mean, I don't know the person, you know, I don't know your friend who went and spoke to ancestors or the group or whatever, but it's enough for me to say, like, someone said posthumously, don't worry about it. And I'm like, okay, great. You know, they're not concerned with these things. So yes, I think that's a huge one, is to examine your thoughts and your belief system around, can you get behind the fact that, you know, once we do pass, our relatives are not going to be turning in their graves. They're not going to hold grudges posthumously for something that you give away in your own life. That's a big one. Do you have any other advice that you'd give others? Or if not advice, what would you want others to take away from your story?
For anyone who is faced with these decisions, you have to take the temperature of where you are emotionally with the things. And if you can reduce some of your attachment, whether it be through contacting your relatives to see how they feel about these things, or thinking about that this is something that it's not yours, you don't need it anymore, so can you give it to someone else who could really value it and treasure it? I think those are two of the best ways to start the process. And as you get more and more into it, you become more and more, you get better and better at that.
Well, I know that this is going to be so useful to so many people. Yeah. Like I said, like we've said throughout, no matter your age, you can do this. But whatever place you're at, we all carry these things. And I know that it's a universal thing to develop some sort of practice around things and how we manage them and what kind of energy they hold in our lives. So thank you for sharing the story about your heirlooms in particular, because I know those were really personal, and for all of your tactics. It's really incredibly useful. Thank you.
You're welcome. I enjoyed it.
Me too.
Did you learn as much as I did from this sort of quieter angle on release and letting go? It's something we don't talk about a lot at all. But Cynthia eloquently describes the benefits as making her feel more open, available, lighter, more alive. I know I definitely want more of that. I'm sure you do too. So think about it. What's your traveling trunk? Your genuine crystal bowl that rings when you ping it? What are you holding on to for reasons that aren't your own? I say, go forth and pick your one snow globe and find out what's on the other side of that energy exchange. Thanks for listening. Hey, one more thing before you go. If you or someone you know is ready to let go of something, let's make it happen. Set up an introductory call with me at inkind.buzzsprout.com. That's B-U-Z-Z sprout.com. To listen, search for InKind on your favorite podcast player.